Also, the word rabbit is formed exactly like any other old English word would be. It has an Anglo-Saxon phonological structure, but we have no evidence of it being there before the 14th century. Before that, you had hares, but you didn't have rabbits. So it's very interesting. It's like they'd always been there, but they'd never been noticed, just like the hobbits. The other influence that Tolkien himself admitted is Babbitt, the Sinclair Lewis book about a very gray flannel, boring, middle-class kind of person and his adventures in life. And Tolkien did think there was something of Babbitt in Bilbo Baggins, and he had read the book. So those are some of the influences that go on. Should also set up that Tolkien had been working on his mythological works, the material that would become the Silmarillion, for close to 15 years when he wrote The Hobbit. And though he never intended The Hobbit to be specifically connected to the mythological world, he found it seeping its way in various little places, which we'll talk about. Tolkien's great success in The Hobbit, which then translates into The Lord of the Rings, is his invention of a character who could mediate between the medieval stories he loved so much and the world of his 20th century middle-class readers and himself. This is really important. When you read medieval epic, when you read Beowulf, when you read Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, it's somewhat alienating because the stories are about only kings and princes and heroes and people who are at the absolute top of almost supernatural powers. And that's not what 20th century novels are about. We have trouble identifying and interacting with those people, and we have trouble understanding why they behave the way they do. Tolkien's brilliant innovation in The Hobbit is to bring in Bilbo Baggins, who, even though he's not a person per se, is a perfect stand-in for bourgeois, middle-class, 20th century life. Okay, maybe he's late 19th rather than 20th centuries. He certainly lives in a pre-industrialized era, but he has a doorbell and a pocket handkerchief, and he smokes a pipe, and he has the Daily Mail, and so forth. And Bilbo sits in between us and the ancient heroic world of kings and princes and revenge and dragons and high style. And it allows Tolkien to have it both ways. He can have his people who speak in elevated language, and he can have his magical dragons and monsters and talking spiders and so forth. And at the same time, he can have people like us who are interpreting it, and that's Bilbo. And you'll see how this works. The mediating effect of Bilbo allows Tolkien to simultaneously take his invented world very, very seriously and comment upon it, and therefore, as an author, have a 20th century sensibility about that world. So it's not just a made-up ancient text. It's a made-up ancient text that connects with us. Let me give you just a quick example before we go into the details of the plot and the story. Thorin the Dwarf invites Bilbo to go on his quest with him with a letter full of very legalistic reasoning. And Tolkien has his narrator comment upon that by saying, by what he meant by this was X. Now, what that does is it shows that Tolkien recognizes the legalistic reasoning of the dwarves, that they are operating on a very contract basis, at the same time that there's this heroic lesson where Thorin says, and bring our curses home to Smaug if we can. And at the same time, Bilbo's saying, I should like to know about remuneration and so forth, the bourgeois sensibility of who's going to get paid and how am I going to get fed and who's going to take care of my body if I die and so forth.